Vanshita Kapatubhyascha Kripasindhu Vaibhyascha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Maitreya Vacha Vijitasva Adhira Jasit Prituputra Prituśava Yaviyobhyo Adatatkashta Vratribhyo Vratrivatsala. The great sage Maitreya continued. He's just completed narrating the departure of Prithu Maharaj for the spiritual world, the departure of Archie for the spiritual world, finishing off the pastimes of Prithu Maharaj, who was a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj, who was the son of King Uttanapad, who was one of the two sons of Swayambhuva Manu. So Prithu Maharaj is in the line of Swayambhuva Manu, coming from Uttanapad and Dhruva Maharaj. So the great sage Maitreya, who is speaking to Vidura, keeps on describing what occurs through the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu and Dhruva Maharaj, and now Prithu Maharaj. Vijitasva, the eldest son of Maharaj Prithu, who had a reputation like his father's, became emperor and gave his younger brothers different directions of the world to govern, for he was very affectionate towards his brothers. 2. Maharaj Vijitasva offered the eastern part of the world to his brother Hariyaksha. Hariyaksha, the southern part to Dumrakesh, the western part to Vrika, and the northern part to Dravina. Formerly, Maharaj Vijitasva pleased the king of heaven, Indra. And from him, from Indra, he received the title of Antardhana. His wife's name was Shikandini, and by her he begot 3 good sons. So, if we remember earlier in the pastime of Prithu Maharaj, in the 19th chapter specifically, when Prithu Maharaj was performing the 100th horse sacrifice, Indra kept stealing away the horses. Why? Because Indra was known as the one who had performed 100 Ashwamedha Yagyas, and he didn't want Prithu Maharaj to equal him. So this is, as we spoke about, this is the nature of any material attachment. It breeds such fear within the consciousness. Fear, envy, enmity. So Indra was like that. So Vijitasva, he stopped Indra, but he did not kill him. And therefore he received a benediction and a name from Indra. We'll read the Prabhupada's purport on this. Maharaj Vijitasva was known as Antardhana, which means disappearance. He received this title from Indra, and it refers to the time when Indra stole Maharaj Prithu's horse from the sacrificial arena. Indra was not visible to others when he was stealing the horse. How did he disguise himself? Sannyasis, as members of different types of religious orders, as renounced personalities. But the external of renunciation was simply to cover his internal motive, his actual motive of stealing away the horse and not getting caught. But yet, even though that Indra disguised himself, and even though Indra made himself invisible at times, he was not visible to others. But Maharaj Prithu's son, Vijitasva, could see him. So each time, Vijitasva chased after Indra with his bow, and Indra was forced to leave the horse and escape with his life. But Vijitasva, despite knowing that Indra was taking away his father's horse, he did not attack him. This indicates that Maharaj Vijitasva respected the right persons. Although Indra was stealing the horse from his father, Vijayatasva knew perfectly well that Indra was not an ordinary thief. Indra was a great, powerful demigod and servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vijayatasva purposefully excused him due to sentiment only, even though Indra was acting wrongly. Thus Indra became very pleased with Vijayatasva at that time. So we understand that when an extraordinary person, extraordinary person like Indra, who is extraordinarily wise, powerful, who is performing such a responsible service, when he does something, we tend to imagine Atmavan Jagate Manyate Jagat. That one tends to see the world according to his own vision. Like Prabhupada once told the story of how a man was calling his wife and he was deaf. So he's calling her and she's saying, I'm coming right now. And he can't hear her because he's deaf. So she's saying, I'm coming right now, and he's thinking she won't answer me because she's deaf. So he's deaf, and therefore he's thinking that she's deaf. Atmavan, one according to one's own self, nature, manyate, his mind, jagat, he perceives the world. Therefore, there are so many different worlds out there in one sense. Why? Because there are so many different individuals who have their own particular type of illusion. And when they see the world, they will see a different world than you and you and you and me. The pure devotee sees the world and he thinks, oh, how this should be used for Krishna, how that should be used for Krishna. Another person, when he looks, he just simply sees money. Another person looks and sees something else. So when a great person does something, an exalted person does something, we would tend to impose our own thinking upon him and think, oh, he's doing it for this motive. But actually what we're seeing in him is just our own mind. So therefore, knowing that, Vijayatasva did not judge Indra. He did not kill him. Because Indra's mind, he knew, was so superior. He wasn't ordinary. He was an exalted personality. So he respected that. So Indra became very pleased with Vijayatasva at that time. The demigods have the great mystic power of being able to appear and disappear according to that will. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have that power? We'd be able to save money on the train. We'd probably get ourselves into so much trouble. Thus Indra gave him that power. And since Indra was very pleased with Vijayatasva, he bestowed this mystic power upon him. Thus Vijayatasva became known as Antardhana. The three sons of Maharaj Antardhana were named Pavaka, Pavamana, and Shuchi. Formerly, these three personalities were the demigods of fire, but due to the curse of the great sage Vasishtha, they became the sons of Maharaj Antardhana. As such, they were as powerful as the fire gods, and they attained the destination of mystic yoga power, being again situated as the demigod of fire. Here's Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. In the Bhagavad Gita 6:41-43, it is stated that one who falls down from yoga practice is elevated to the heavenly planets. And after enjoying the material facilities there, he again comes down to the earthly planet and takes his birth in a very rich family or a very pious Brahmana family. Thus it is to be understood that when demigods fall down, they come to earth as sons of a very rich and pious families. In such families, the living entity gets an opportunity to execute Krishna consciousness. and thereby gained promotion to his desired goal. The sons of Maharaj Antardhan had been the demigods in charge of fire, and they regained their former position and by mystic power returned to the heavenly planets. Text 5. Maharaj Antardhan had another wife named Nabaswati, and by her he was happy to beget another son named Haradhan. Since Maharaj Antardhan was very liberal, he did not kill Indra while the demigod was stealing his father's horse at the sacrifice. Antardhan was very liberal-minded. Again, describing his position. Text 6. Whenever Antardhan, who was the king, he had two wives, so many sons. Whenever Antardhan, the supreme royal power, had to exact taxes to punish his citizens or fine them severely, he was not willing to do so. Because he was very liberal-minded. He was very forgiving, very broad-minded. So he wouldn't act as a very strict king. Consequently, he retired from the execution of such duties and engaged himself in the performance of different sacrifices. Very interesting. He wasn't inclined to perform the particular duty that he was supposed to do. And yet, because he was a great soul, and because Krishna had another plan for him, this was not considered bad. It was not considered sinful. Usually in the Vedic culture, the definition of sin is neglect of one's prescribed duty. That is the basic definition. Not doing, declining to do, or somehow or another not doing what one is supposed to do. So that is the definition of sin. But Antardhan was pure, simple, liberal-minded, and he did not have an inclination for the particular duty which was entrusted to him. And yet it wasn't considered sinful because of his exalted consciousness. So what he did was he retired from the execution of his duty and he only performed different sacrifices. Although Maharaj Antardhan was engaged in performing sacrifices, because he was a self-realized soul, this is why it wasn't inappropriate, he was pure. He very intelligently rendered devotional service to the Lord, who eradicates all the fears of his devotees. By thus worshipping the Supreme Lord, Maharaj Antardhan, wrapped in ecstasy, attained the Lord's planet very easily. The Prabhupada in the purport explains that as he did in previous verses and purports, that when sacrifices were performed, the purpose of the sacrifices were to please Vishnu. In different ages, there are different sacrifices recommended. So in the age of Kali, Prabhupada explains, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Parasevanam Archanam Bandhanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanavedanam. Devotional service is called Kirtan Jagya. And by practicing the Sankirtan Jagya, one is very easily elevated to the planet where the Supreme Lord resides. Out of the five kinds of liberations, achieving the same planet where the Lord resides and living with the Lord there is called Salokya liberation. So there are different types of liberations or different types of freedoms possible that we can attain. Freedom from what? Freedom from the prison, from the bars, the shackles of the material energy, which at this point has us bound very tightly. What are those? What are these shackles of the material energy? What are the ropes that bind us? They are the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, ignorance. And just like when you see a rope, it's always twisted around the different strands, especially if three strands are used. Why? Because the rope becomes stronger when the strands are twisted. So similarly, the rope that binds us, goodness, passion, and ignorance, is twisted in that way, three strands into a very tight binding force. So liberation means becoming free from that. So when people who don't have much knowledge think of freedom, they just think that I lose my conditioned or bound existence, and therefore there's nothing left. Because everything that I see is conditioned. Everything I am now is conditioned. It's controlled. It's in the prison of the material world. So therefore, when those bars disappear, then people think they simply merge to the great oneness. This is even the contemporary half-serious seekers of philosophy and serious people generally have the conception that the goal of Indian philosophy or the goal of religion, even religionists think this, of every religion, more or less, almost everyone thinks the goal is to what? Lose your identity, merge with God, become one with everything. Loss of identity. But that's one type of liberation called Sayuja Mukti. And this Sayuja Mukti generally is only temporary too. And sometimes Krishna will award someone who has Sayuja Mukti the ability to go from Brahman to Golok or to Vaikuntha. But generally it is temporary. So that is only one kind of liberation where one loses one's individuality. Another type is Salokya, where one goes to the Vaikuntha planets and lives on the same planet as the Lord. Salokya, which on the Lord's planet. And then there is Samipya and Sharshti and Sarupya. Sarupya? Yeah. One is an intimate associate of the Lord. Salokya and means that one is like a citizen of the Lord's planet. And one sees him every now and then. And then one can become an intimate associate of the Lord, or have an identical form as the Lord, almost identical. So there, or have all the opulences of the Lord, live very close to the Lord. So many different types of liberation. And the highest form of liberation, highest, what does highest mean? When we talk about the highest, we usually have a vision of something in space, higher, higher, higher. But what does highest mean? Highest means, in this sense, it means that liberation or that situation where we're intimately, the more intimate we are with Krishna, that is considered the highest or the best. So therefore the Sayuja liberation, where we just lose our identity, is considered the furthest away from Krishna. And Salokya is closer, because one has his individuality, can serve Krishna, and he's on the same planet as him. But the liberation available to in Goloka Vrindavan is still the highest. Why? Because the relationship is the most intimate with Krishna. So Antardhan achieves the Salokya liberation, which of course is glorious. Now, Antardhan left this world and he retired, and then one of his sons was named Havardhan, and he was the next in the royal succession. Havardhan, the son of Maharaj Antardhan, had a wife named Havardhani, who gave birth to six sons named Barhishat, Gaya, Sukla, Krishna, Satya, and Jitavrata. The great sage Maitreya continued to narrate this. My dear Vidura, Havardhana's very powerful son named Barhishat. Now here's where we're going to pick up a story in detail. Havardhana's very powerful son named Barhishat was very expert in performing various kinds of fruitive sacrifices. So he was very interested in performing sacrifices. But his purpose wasn't to please Krishna, which is the actual purpose of sacrifice. But his purpose was to gain some material benefit. So there's basically two levels of these karma kanda, or sacrifices to gain material benefit that I mentioned in the Vedas. So one level is to gain things in this life. One pleases the demigods, pleases Krishna, and gains something in this life. This is a pious way to enjoy life, as opposed to a hedonistic, impious way to enjoy life. And another level of performance of sacrifice is when one performs a sacrifice not to gain something in this life, but to elevate himself to higher planets, to gain something in future lives. Where, because on this planet there's a limit to how much one can enjoy, because the grossness of the consciousness actually limits one's enjoyment, or dictates the level that one will enjoy on, how gross or subtle one's consciousness is. So going to the higher planets means achieving a subtle type of consciousness. Material, but subtle, capable of naturally. Subtle means more in the mode of goodness. So capable of more fine enjoyment. So Barishat was expert at performing these pious sacrifices, which are meant to bring one fruit of results, higher, more subtle enjoyments. And he was also expert in the practice of mystic yoga. By his great qualifications, he became known as Prajapati. Maharaj Barishat executed many sacrifices all over the world. He scattered Kusha grass, and he kept the tops of the grasses pointed eastward. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the previous verse, Kriya Kandeshunishnata, Maharaj Barishat dived very deeply into the fruit of activities of sacrifice. This means that as soon as he finished one jagya in one place, he began performing another jagya in the immediate vicinity. At the present moment, there is a similar need to perform Sankirtan jagya all over the world. The Krishna Consciousness Movement has started performing Sankirtan Jagya in different places. And it has been experienced that wherever Sankirtan Jagya is performed, many thousands of people gather and take part in it. Imperceptible auspiciousness achieved in this connection should be continued all over the world. The members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement should perform Sankirtan Jagya one after another, so much so that all the people of the world will either jokingly or seriously chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, 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 Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And thus, they will derive the benefit of cleansing the heart. The holy name of the Lord, Hare Nam, is so powerful that whether it is chanted jokingly or seriously, the effect of vibrating this transcendental sound will be equally distributed. Once in Australia, there was a newspaper article written after Prabhupada's arrival, and it wasn't very favorable. But Prabhupada said, "My Guru Maharaj used to judge an article's worth by how many times the name of Krishna is mentioned." So, of course, Prabhupada was trying to encourage the devotees. But yet, there's great truth in this. So he asked, how many times is Krishna's name mentioned in this article? So he said, 17. The devotee answered, 17. So then Prabhupada said, and how many people is the newspaper distributed? So they said, 2 million. So he said, 17 times 2 million? So many times Krishna's names will have been chanted. So just even neglectfully, Hela. So this is in the Bhagavatam, these verses describing, we'll read this in the sixth canto, especially. that even if there and in Harinam Chintamani, this is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and I think Bhanu Swami, when he comes, is that true? He's going to lecture on Harinam Chintamani. That it is capable, this is called Namavas, that if one chants, as long as one doesn't chant on the level of Namaparad or offensively, if one avoids the offenses in the chanting of the Holy Name, if one chants even on the Namabhas level, one can get liberation. So even if one says, let's go to the Bolarama, or the, I don't know what other Oramas they have, or even if there's, Snakarama, the Washarama, Rama, or, yeah.
What about drama?
If you probably say it poorly enough, it will work. Yeah. Dharma. or even if you take the name, even if you mean something else, like the word is given in it's the language Urdu or something, the word Hara. Harama means, or the Muslims, that means it's something that is inappropriate to eat. Something like that. It's inappropriate to eat, or it's horrible. So, or abominable. So even if one thinks that something abominable is happening, and if one is a Muslim and one is chanting Harama, Harama, there's benefit. Or if one says a word that has the Ra, or the Krish in one part, and then there's another word in between, another syllable in between, and the Na is later. I can't think of anything with Krishna, but in that as an example of that. But if there's a word that has one syllable of a holy name, and then there's another word in between, another syllable in between, and then the completion of the holy name is later. That also has potency, but this can liberate one from the material world and free one from sins. But it cannot award prema bhakti, but it can liberate one from the material world. So how powerful are the holy names to get to actually achieve prema bhakti? One needs to chant Sudanam, or the pure holy name with a pure heart and great loving devotion. But in any case, the people of the world, so Prabhupada is saying that either just chant Hare Krishna all over the world so that people will either jokingly or seriously chant the holy names and derive the benefit of cleansing the heart. So even if one time Prabhupada said, saying Hare Krishna is bad is good, because at least you're saying Hare Krishna. But of course, saying Hare Krishna is good is better. But saying Hare Krishna is bad is also good, because Krishna's names are being vibrated. It is not possible, continues Prabhupada, at the present moment to perform repeated yajñas as Maharaj Varhishat performed. But it is within our means to perform sekirtan yajña, which does not cost anything. One can sit down anywhere and chant Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. If the surface of the globe is over flooded with the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, the people of the world will be very, very happy. So Maharaj Varhishat performed many sacrifices, these fruit of activity sacrifices. Maharaj Varhishat, henceforth known as Prachina Varhi. Prachin means old. Was ordered by the supreme demigod Lord Brahma to marry the daughter of the ocean named Shatadruti. Her bodily features were completely beautiful, and she was very young. She was decorated with the proper garments, and when she came into the marriage arena and began circumambulating it, the fire god Agni became so attracted to her that he desired her company. exactly as he formerly desired to enjoy Shuki. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the word Shushtva Alankritam is significant from culture. According to the Vedic system, when a girl is married, she is very profusely and gorgeously decorated with costly saris and jewelry. And during the marriage ceremony, the bride circumambulates the groom 7 times. After this, the bridegroom and the bride is wearing the veil over her face. And then the veil is lifted, and the bridegroom and bride, or rather the bride wears the veil over her face. And then the veil is lifted, and the bridegroom and bride look at one another. And they look into each other's eyes, and they become attracted for life. When the bridegroom finds the bride very beautiful, the attraction between them immediately becomes very strongly fixed. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, men and women are naturally attracted to one another. And when they are united by marriage, that attraction becomes very strong. Being so strongly attracted, the bridegroom attempts to set up a nice homestead and eventually a good field for producing grains or wealth in some form or another. Then children come, then friends, then wealth. In this way, the male becomes more and more entangled in the material conception of life, and he begins to think, this is mine, and it is I who am acting. In this way, the illusion of material existence is perpetuated. So, on one hand, Prabhupada is criticizing the perpetuation of illusion, but yet this is the Vedic system, and there is good reason why it's performed, because the husband and the wife, they should be attracted to each other. Why? Even though it entangles one in illusion, yet on one side, if one performs activities in a pious way, according to religious principles, that even though one gets somewhat entangled, if one has the inclination to be entangled, one will get entangled, but one will become purified over time, and a detachment will develop. And one at the end of one's life, even though one may become very entrapped at the end of one's life, also, as we saw with Prithviraj, he went to the forest and broke the attachments that he had developed during his life. And at the end, he went back to Godhead by following the Vedic system. So one is allowed to get entangled in material life, but not in a hedonistic way, but according to a shastrically regulated way. And that is considered good. It is considered so far superior, because from out of that entanglement will be born detachment quite naturally. But yet, if one can avoid the entanglement completely and not have to get entangled to later have to undergo the delicate and difficult process of disentangling himself, if one can remain unentangled, if one has the ability to do that, that is considered superior, far superior. But yet, so there's 2 levels that we have talked about, and those 2 levels are both better than the 3rd level. First is the ideal level of not getting entangled, and then is less than that, but also very pious and fruitful, is when one gets entangled but gradually will unentangle oneself, knowing that one has to leave everything behind at the time of death. And these 2 are so far superior to hedonistic life and becoming attracted to one partner, then switching that partner for another one, and then switching that one for another one, and switching that one for another one, and another one, and going back and forth and like this. So that is considered not even human life, because it will not breed, it will not give birth to anything eternal or proper or lasting. The passion that one has will be degraded into ignorance. text 12. So Barishat married Shatadruti, who was very beautiful. Well, Shatadruti, this is text 12, was thus being married. The demons, she was so beautiful. The demons, the denizens of Gandharvaloka, the great sages, and the denizens of Siddhaloka, the earthly planets, and Nagaloka, although highly exalted, were all captivated by the tinkling of her ankle bells. So, her ankle bells were very, very attractive as she walked around and attracted so many powerful persons to her. So this is the tendency for someone in the material world to become attracted to the members of the opposite sex. Why? And what is the danger? And why is that condemned in so many ways? And why is in the Prabhupada in this purport, or possibly in a later purport, explains that how bad it is, the attraction between man and woman, because that fixes one in the consciousness between man and woman and woman and man. It fixes one in the consciousness of I am the enjoyer, which is the very root of the consciousness. The very root of the consciousness that keeps us in the material world. And that is the thing that has to be broken. I am not the enjoyer. I am just Krishna's servant. Simply a servant, an insignificant servant of that one of billions. I'm insignificant, but the universe shouldn't and doesn't revolve around my enjoyment. It revolves around Krishna's enjoyment. So not thinking like that, I'm thinking that I am the enjoyer is typified or personified in the attraction for one person of one sex for another of the sex. Fixes one in that consciousness. That you are meant for my pleasure. Atma indriya priti vansha tari balikam. This is called lust. When you are meant for my pleasure. So everyone was so attracted to her. Text 13. King Pachinibarhi begot 10 children in the womb of Shatadruti. All of them were equally endowed with religiosity, and all of them were known as the Prachetas. Now, as we mentioned yesterday, this chapter and chapter 30 and 31 will deal with the sons of Maharaj Pachinibarhisat, who are known as the Prachetas. This chapter is 24, and then 30 and 31 will deal with them. And then 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29 will deal with the pastimes or the stories told by Narada Muni to King Pachinibarhisat to break him of this fruit of tendency to perform materialistically pious, fruitive activities. So now we're going to start hearing about the Prachetas. Text 14. So the Prachetas were the sons of Maharaj Pachinibarhisat by Shatadruti. When all these Prachetas, how many were there? 10. They were ordered by their father to marry and beget children. And they all entered the ocean and practiced austerities and penances for 10,000 years. Thus they worshipped the master of all austerity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here's Prabhupada's purport, which describes the purpose of performing austerities. Sometimes great sages and ascetics enter the Himalayan mountains in order to find seclusion from the turmoil of this world. Because when one goes to a place like that, raise your hand if you've ever been to the Himalayas. You're from that place, practically speaking. You too? You've been there? Where have you been? Simla. Where else?
South.
Huh?
Further south.
South. From nowhere up north, further than that. Okay. So when you go deep into the mountains, there is such an incredible peace that exists there, and one becomes absorbed in that peace. The mind becomes very peaceful, one becomes very satisfied and happy. And in that state, it is very easy to meditate, to perform austerities, to move forward in spiritual life. So, because there is less turmoil there. But it appears, however, that all the Pachetas, instead of going to the Himalayas, the sons of Pachini Barishad, enter the depths of the ocean to perform austerity in a secluded place. Now that you won't find the hustle and bustle of civilization in depths of the ocean. Since they performed austerities for 10,000 years, this incident took place in the Satyuga, where people used to live for 100,000 years. It is also significant that by their austerity, they worship the master of austerity, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one wants to perform austerities and penances in order to attain the supreme goal, one must attain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one achieves the favor of the Supreme Lord, it is to be understood that he has finished all kinds of austerities and penances and has attained efficiency in their execution. On the other hand, if one does not attain the perfect stage of devotional service, all austerities and penances actually have no meaning. For without the Supreme Lord, no one can attain the highest results derived from performing them. So the point that Prabhupada is making is they performed austerities, and the purpose of the austerities was to please Krishna. The purpose of jagya, sacrifices, to please Krishna, and the purpose of tapasya, or austerities, is to please Krishna. And if one, by performance of austerities, sometimes you see that people will, not so much anymore, people do perform austerities. They don't eat for days, they don't sleep, but it's always to make money, or to enjoy in one way or another. But these austerities are not in goodness, and they do not please the Lord. They bring some material result at times, but they're not really the purpose of austerities. Because austerities are meant to please Krishna, please the Lord. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is the master of all penances and sacrifices. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sabaloka maheshanam. Thus, the desired result of performing austerities may be derived from Lord Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, so Krishna is to be pleased, so there's better ways to please him than flagellating one's body or whatever, or living under the ocean even, or high in the Himalayan mountains in the cold. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated, Aho vata supacho tokriyan yaja vagre vatate namatubhyam te pastapaste juhuva shasharaya brahmano nuchar namagranantiyete. Even if a person is born in a family of chandals, the lowest birth one can get in human society, he is glorious if he chants the holy name of the Lord. For it is to be understood that by such chanting, a devotee definitely proves that he underwent all kinds of austerities in his previous life. By the grace of Lord Chaitanya, one who chants the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, attains the highest perfectional stage, which had previously been attained by people who went to the ocean and executed austerities for 10,000 years. In this age of Kali, if a person does not take advantage of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, which is offered as a great concession to the fallen human beings of this age, it is to be understood that he is very much bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord. 6:15. When all the sons of Prachini Bharhi left home to execute austerities, they met Lord Shiva, who out of great mercy instructed them about the absolute truth. So Maitreya Muni is explaining this to Vaidura. All the sons of Puchini Bharhi meditated upon the instructions, chanting and worshipping them with great care and attention. So here are some interesting purports by Prabhupada. It is clear that to perform austerities or penances, so the Prachetas left home, and before they went into the ocean to perform austerities, they were given some instructions by Lord Shiva, and they meditated upon those instructions with great care and attention, and they gained success by that. So here's Prabhupada's purport. It is clear that to perform austerities or penances, or for that matter, any form of devotional service, one has to be guided by a spiritual master. Here it is clearly stated that the 10 sons of Maharaj Puchini Bharhi were favored by the appearance of Lord Shiva, who out of great kindness gave them instructions regarding the execution of austerities. Lord Shiva actually became the spiritual master of the 10 sons, and in turn his disciples took his words so seriously that simply by meditating upon his instructions, Dhyayanta, they became perfect. That is the secret of success. After being initiated and receiving the orders of the spiritual master, the disciples should unhesitatingly think about the instructions or orders of the spiritual master and should not allow himself to be disturbed by anything else. This is also the verdict of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who, while explaining a verse of Bhagavad Gita, Vyavya Satnika Buddhi Ekeha Kuru Nandana, Bhagavad Gita 241, he points out that the order of the spiritual master is the life substance of the disciple. The disciple should not consider whether he is going back home, back to Godhead. His first business should be to execute the order of his spiritual master. Thus a disciple should always meditate on the order of the spiritual master, and that is perfectional meditation. Not only should he meditate upon that order, but he should find out the means by which he can perfectly worship it and execute it. So very important, strong words by Prabhupada in the purport. So after hearing this, Vidura asked Maitreya, and from 16, 17, 18, let's see if we'll be able to read those. Vidura questions Maitreya about what he heard. He wants to know more about this. What happened with the Pachetas? He said, "My dear Brahman, why did the Pachetas meet Lord Shiva on the way? Because Lord Shiva is so difficult to have darshan of, to meet. To see why, what was it that caused them to meet Lord Shiva? Because they were just going to perform austerities in the ocean and this great fortune came upon them. Please tell me," so that's the first question. "Please tell me how the meeting happened, how Lord Shiva became very pleased with them, and how he instructed them. Certainly such talks are important, and I wish that you please be merciful upon me and describe them." Because when there are two exalted people, even in the material world, when you see two beautiful people talking, or very, very wealthy people, or powerful politicians talking, sitting there whispering to each other, one naturally is inclined to know what they're talking about. So what to speak of two exalted personalities like Maitreya and Vidura? What did they talk about? Excuse me, the Pachetas and Lord Shiva, what did they talk about? So Vidura was eager to hear. The great sage, Vidura continued to ask, "O best of the Brahmanas, it is very difficult for living entities encaged within this material body to have personal contact with Lord Shiva. Even great sages who have no material attachments do not contact him, despite their always being absorbed in meditation to attain his personal contact. Lord Shiva," this is the last verse we're going to read, "the most powerful demigod, second only to Lord Vishnu, is self-sufficient. Although he has nothing to aspire for in the material world, for the benefit of those in the material world, he's always busily engaged everywhere and is accompanied by his dangerous energies like Goddess Kali and Goddess Durga. So Lord Shiva, Vaishnavanam Tata Shambhu, he is the greatest of the Vaishnavas. There's a Vaishnava Sampradaya that comes from Lord Shiva. He is a Mahajan, a great soul. And when he came as Shankaracharya, seemingly to preach Mayavad philosophy, even then, in his last instructions, said, Bhajagovinda, 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 Mudhar Mate, worship Govinda. So he's the greatest of personalities. So what was it that he instructed the Pachetas? What was it that he told them? We're going to hear that in this chapter. So in this verse, explains that Lord Shiva is engaged for the good of others, and he's always with his dangerous energies, Kali and the goddess Durga. We're going to read just a little bit of the purport, and then we'll end. But we'll read a little bit of the purport on those dangerous energies. Lord Shiva's duty, this is about in the middle of the purport, a little, well, two-thirds of the way through. Lord Shiva's duty is very dangerous because he has to employ the energy of goddess Kali or Durga. In another popular picture, the goddess Kali is sometimes seen standing on the prostrate body of Lord Shiva, which indicates that sometimes Lord Shiva has to fall down flat in order to stop goddess Kali from killing the Asuras. Since Lord Shiva controls the great material energy, goddess Durga, Lord Shiva is the controller of the material world. Worshippers of Lord Shiva attain very opulent positions within this material world. Under Lord Shiva's direction, a worshipper of Lord Shiva gets all kinds of material facilities. In contrast, the Vaishnava, a worshipper of Lord Vishnu, gradually becomes poorer in material possessions. So Lord Shiva's worshippers become wealthy, and it seems at times that the worshippers of Lord Vishnu become poorer in their material possessions. Why? Because Lord Vishnu does not trick his devotees into becoming materially entangled by possessions. Lord Vishnu gives his devotees something else, something quite different than just material possessions. He gives his devotees intelligence from within, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajitam Priti Bhogakam Dadami Bhuti Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Bhagavad Gita 10.10. Thus Lord Vishnu gives intelligence to his devotees so that the devotee can make progress on the path back home, back to Godhead. Since a devotee has nothing to do with any kind of material possessions, he does not come under the control of the goddess Kali or the goddess Durga, the material energy. In other words, he becomes free. But yet, the Pachetas receive some wonderful instructions from Lord Shiva. And we will hear about those in the next classes. Very wonderful instructions, actually. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yep.
You mentioned earlier about the person's loss of identity
Okay. But you, okay. So you're saying in some sense we may lose our identity. Okay. But you say that our independence is what we have. So we are different from our independence. So it is ourselves. That's what's being offered with our free will in great love. We're offering whatever we have, whoever we are, whatever our individual characteristics are. That's what it means to be an individual. We have individual characteristics. A person, we are individuals, persons. So that is what is being offered with love. Okay, yes.
We said the devotees do not come under the control of Goddess Kali or Kali Buddha, means pure devotees.
Means pure devotees, because they're free. They're free from the material energy. Mam chayo vivacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan simite jaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. They're above the control of, because there's no false ego. Lord Shiva is the, and we're actually hear this in Lord Shiva's prayers, the, about the false ego. It has a predominating deity, even. But it's in the material world, so the devotee is above false ego, and if one doesn't have a false ego, then one is not under the control of the material energy. Usually we talk more from the level of the modes of material nature. And the modes of material nature are inert. It's all quite mechanical. But it's set up. It's not like there's a devil there who's, you know, tempting us and throwing, you know, specifically we're walking down the road and the devil comes along and puts thumbtacks on the path and stuff like that. It's not quite like that. But the illusory energy acts in a wonderful way that naturally the mind, entrapped by false ego, influenced by the mode of passion, ignorance, has a tendency towards sense enjoyment. And it's so many tendencies, unlimited tendencies, not only sense enjoyment, so many tendencies other than loving service to Krishna. These are all coverings, contaminants, layered upon the soul. So it works quite automatically. Looking at it from the point of view of the modes of material nature. Now, exactly how it works from the point of view of Durga, I can't say that I know. But the material energy, which is supervised by Durga Devi, it will always win in the material world. The living entities cannot win. The material energy will crush everyone who has a disposition to try to exert themselves in the material world as if it was meant for them. She wins, and they are called therefore asura, having a demonic nature. I can't answer more than that, I'm afraid. Last question.
I want to know about the liberation you mentioned.
Yes.
Apart from the highest liberation, is it possible to fall down from the rest of the liberations?
No.
Liberation is liberation.
Except from the lowest liberation of Sayuja, what you merge in with the Lord. Because
is that the one Sri Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita that the person who comes to his lotus feet will always be the leader?
That's not the one. All the rest are that one. He's not talking about merging, becoming one with him. He's talking about those who go to my planet, the Paramagati, the supreme abode. They never have to return to this miserable material world again.
So from the other ones, is it not possible to go back?
No. there's five liberations. One, Sayuja, where one loses one's identity and merges with the effulgence of the Lord, is not really considered a liberation, and it is often spoken of as it will be temporary. But the others are eternal, and once one goes to the spiritual world, one never has to return again, and one goes to Krishna. But that merging, losing one's identity, that Sayuja Mukti, is an unnatural state of consciousness for a living entity. It's like being asleep, deep, deep, deep sleep. One will wake up, one will wish some activity, one will be active, and then one has no realm, one isn't qualified for spiritual activity, so generally one will come down to material activity again. So that is the one that sometimes it is described as can be temporary, even though the temporary is for billions of years, maybe billions and billions and billions of years. But the others are all eternal, because one achieves through the others association with Krishna, varying degrees of intimacy. Is that clear? Sure? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Prabhupada.